heard you're getting married. Heard you're getting married. This time you're really sure. And this is the end. They say you really mean it. This guy's the one that makes you feel so safe, so sane, so secure. And baby, if he loves you more than me, maybe it's the best thing. Baby, it's the best thing for you. But it's the worst that could happen.
I've never said this before at the top of an episode, but you're actually listening to part two of a two-part interview. Interview doesn't even really describe it, but an experience with Jimmy Webb, the singer, songwriter, pianist, composer, storyteller. You know him from songs like Wichita Lineman, By the Time I Get to Phoenix, MacArthur Park, Up, Up and Away. He's also written two books, including a memoir called The Cake and the Rain. He has a new CD out called Slipcover, which is actual piano covers of other composer's songs, and one of his own also. So, as I say, we've never done a two-part show before, and you'll be able to find part one if you haven't heard it already. Will be linked to on the show page here. And the reason we did this, I think, was because this was a bigger adventure than we usually do. We went to Long Island. We had things happen. It was a big day. There were flat tires. There was a two-hour interview with Jimmy playing and singing. And so we think that at the end of it all, we captured Jimmy Webb in a way that we haven't seen him captured before, even though there have been many interviews and depictions. So we hope you enjoy part two here as much as you enjoyed part one and as much as we enjoyed doing it. So I always am intrigued by songwriters who also perform, and also songwriters. A lot of songwriters who perform their own work don't cover other people's work that much. Mm-hmm. There are some exceptions. Like Laura Nyro, who I know that you write about in the book and this bad moment she has at Monterey, she does versions of Jimmy Mac and Gonna Take a Miracle that are as good as anybody else's. But I think that's an unusual thing, right?
For a She was pure artist.
Yeah.
I don't think she ever thought about, well, that's somebody else's song. It just came sort of spouting out of her, a fountain of creativity, if you will. Which is interesting because what a dramatic entrance she made on the world stage, and the world wasn't quite ready for Laura. But
and she wasn't quite ready for the world in certain ways, too, I think.
God bless her. You know, she was an amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to do something of hers.
Yeah.
Hopefully I'm going to be able to continue these albums,
mm-hmm.
even if it's ever so quietly just adding to this.
Do you think you would on some occasions sing? This is all solo piano. If you did another one, would you be tempted to sing?
No, I wouldn't. It would be instrumental.
Yeah.
Well, my next album is going to be vocal album
mm-hmm.
with real songs, like new Jimmy Webb songs. Oh. Imagine. I mean.
Yeah. I'm ready.
Can you figure?
I'm ready.
You know.
I mean, one of the structurally interesting pop songs that you wrote early on is By the Time I Get to Phoenix, because lyrically, this song is describing somebody getting further and further away geographically, and you're going through stops in the day by the time I make Albuquerque. I don't think I've ever heard a song like that that is narrated as
He never really leaves her. He's still with her.
Yeah.
Now he sees her at work.
Mm-hmm.
She'll hear that empty phone that keeps on ringing.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know.
Yeah. You want to play a couple bars of that? You feel moved? I have Jimmy Webb at my disposal. This is never going to happen again.
I tell you, this is a good model on an ABC form that takes you through a story.
Yeah.
This is just three verses.
Right.
by the time I get to Phoenix, she'll be rising. She'll find the note that I left hanging on her door. She'll laugh when she reads the part that says I'm leaving, 'cause I've left that girl too many times. Too many times before.
Yeah.
By then, the person listening to the song, they've either moved on to another station or they're going to listen to the song.
Yeah. Do you remember, did you consciously set out at the beginning to write a song that was structured in that odd way?
I was never manipulative. But what I liked to do, I liked to tell stories. Mm-hmm. And I liked O. Henry, believe it or not, of all the people in the world that you would think, well, surely O. Henry didn't influence Jimmy Webb.
Gift of the Magi.
I liked the tricky endings.
Yep.
It's like in that Gershwin tune where they say, but there's no not for me.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no not. Is that right? Am I right? They're singing songs of love.
But not for me. Yeah.
And every lover's knot, da 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 da, but there's no knot for me.
All right.
Can
we talk about just quickly about bridges? So, bridges are interesting, and your bridges, I think, are interesting. Sometimes I think a bridge almost is there to surprise you. I'll give you an example from your own work. So, All I Know. So All I Know starts pretty simply, right?
Mm-hmm. It's a folk song, yeah.
But then that bridge comes, and it really is melodically a big departure, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I bruise you. You bruise me. Both bruised so easily, too easily, to let it show. I love you, and it's all I know. I've really got that high.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
That's higher than Glenn sings it. It's really more like, I bruise you, you bruise me. I love you, and it's all I know. When the singer's gone, that the song goes on.
You went for that Art Garfunkel note right there.
When the singer's gone, let the song go on. It's a fine line between the darkness and the dawn. They say in the darkest night, there's a light beyond. Very simple song, but it does have that.
The bridge is when it stops getting simple, though, to me anyway.
Yeah.
Like at the beginning, da 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 da, I'm thinking, I could write that song. And then the bridge comes. And melodically, I think we're in a really different place there. Maybe you have a theory about it. Why is there a bridge? Why does a bridge exist? You know?
Because there are so many forms of poetry. We have sonatas that if you go into classical poetry, and there's all kinds of forms. And songwriting sort of represents the whole record phenomena of personal devices that would play music, sort of led to this offshoot of the Great American Songbook and these songs.
Yeah.
But you're not allotted, you're not given Rudyard Kipling's range here to tell the story of the Charge of the Light Brigade.
Right.
You're given 2.5 minutes. In the old days, 2.5 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, you know, we did some things that changed that around a little bit. MacArthur Park was 7:21.
Mm-hmm.
Hey Jude was then consequently 7:17. But the classicists of songwriting realized that they only had about 2 minutes or 3 minutes to tell a whole story. And that's why you had to have lines like, when your heart's on fire, you must realize smoke gets in your eyes. That's O. Henry.
Yeah.
That's the hook ending.
Yeah.
That's really clever, and you weren't expecting that. So the form evolved. And it's if you want to talk about it, nobody ever really wants to talk about it.
I want to talk about it. I'll talk about it.
There's all kinds of different American songwriting forms.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is just two verses. This time we almost made the pieces fit. Didn't we? This time we almost made some sense of it. Didn't we, girl? Now I'm going to skip to the second verse. This time we almost made that a poem rhyme. This time we almost made that long, long hard climb. This time, that's two verses.
Would have been better if we had Connie Stevenson here doing it with you.
By the time I get to Phoenix, it's three verses.
Right.
That's a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a true ballad.
Mm-hmm.
A true ballad is the same melody and the same rhythm, the same strophe over and over again.
Yeah.
Like a Bob Dylan song, like Mr. Tambourine Man. It's a true ballad. It tells a story. Usually of some well-known person.
Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. I'm not sleepy, and there is no place I'm going to. Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. In the jingle jangle morning, I'll come following you.
Mm-hmm. So then you get to... Felice and Bootle O'Brien, and you're going to, let's see, what am I going to do? Because I love the Everly Brothers, and I love their writing. Let's see. Dream, when I need you in the night. I want you to hold me tight whenever I want you. All I have to do is dream.
Then there's a second verse.
Arms and I need you
with all your charms.
And all your charms. Whenever I want you, all I have to do is dream.
And here comes the bridge.
I can make you mine, taste your lips of lime, anytime, night or day. Only trouble is, gee whiz, I'm dreaming my life. I love you. it evokes Buddy Holly to me.
Yeah.
I feel Buddy Holly very strongly coming through there.
But the bridge is the opportunity also to surprise us. Like Simon's Still Crazy. So that song sets up, you know, I met my old lover on the street one day, blah, blah, blah. And then you suddenly come to 4 in the morning, tapped out. You know, that's like a huge melodic payoff. Melodically, that's a shock. You know, the music goes way up. It departs totally from the melody. And Simon's kind of saying, you thought you knew what the song was.
Well, he's a good composer.
He is, yeah.
And the idea of saddling a lyric with a composition that is perfect for that lyric is underestimated as a trick.
Yeah.
Because it's quite a trick. Mm-hmm. He did that album, One Trick Pony. Mm-hmm. And I always thought that that's what the trick was, because his melodies and lyrics are sublime when they're hooked up. Like I did on the piano,
you drove French,
I did,
right?
It sounds like
Satie, Ravel, Debussy. I think he's listening to those
composition,
those composers as he's writing that song.
So that was one of my things I wanted to say. Pay attention, because these guys weren't just, weren't just schmoes.
No,
you know.
And like the French Impressionist composers, like Satie, he gets a lot out of just a couple of notes.
Very minimalist.
Yeah.
Lovely treatment. Yeah. I'm saying a lovely treatment of his own lyrics. Mm-hmm. That can be an elusive thing.
Right.
We'll take a little break here and be right back with more of Jimmy Webb. Let's go out with Paul Simon's Still Crazy After All These Years.
I met my old lover on the street last night. She seemed so glad to see me. I just smiled. And we talked about some old times, and we drank ourselves some beers. Still crazy after all these years. Oh, still crazy after all these years. I'm not the kind of man who tends to socialize. I seem to lean on old familiar ways. And I ain't no fool for love.
Christian, no, Christian, no. Take the time, take it slow. You'll be leaving soon enough. Make the teardrops flow. Christian, no.
We're back. You're listening to a show we recorded over the course of a day with Jimmy Webb, one of the great songwriters of the American rock and pop era, the man who gave us Wichita Lineman, By the Time I Get to Phoenix, Up, Up and Away, MacArthur Park. This is an unusual project for us. You're listening to the second of two parts. So here's more of Jimmy Webb.
Take it slow and don't listen.
You're probably tired of talking about MacArthur Park. But, you were just talking a few seconds ago about the way people would talk about popular music of the 60s and 70s as though it were this disposable thing. MacArthur Park feels like a conscious effort to write something that was not easily dismissible in that way, something that felt classical in composition. What were you thinking about while you were doing
that? I was really on a writing assignment for Bones Howe, who was producing the Association.
Right.
And the Association were really one of my favorite bands.
Mm-hmm.
Bones said to me, I'm doing the Association, and he says, I'm wondering, could you, he and I had a side project going with the Fifth Dimension,
mm-hmm.
who were pretty hot that at the time, if you could write something in the rock vein,
mm-hmm.
but with classical movements.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you came to the right place. Because that's exactly what I'd like to mm-hmm. do. And I was listening to Tommy.
You had that
so
Yamaha.
I was fascinated mm-hmm. with that. And I had this 9-foot grand.
Yeah.
And I had George Martin.
Mm-hmm.
To, you know, I had the Beatles and Brian Wilson, Pet mm-hmm. Sound.
Yeah.
And I jumped in with both feet and I just tried to create a contemporary piece that still had some of the charm mm-hmm. and some of the technique. Leonard Bernstein called them transformational elements.
Mm.
So, like, for instance, in MacArthur Park, the melody starts in the harpsichord and it goes na 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 na. When it gets to the melody, that's retrograde. Da 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 da. That's a transformational element.
Girl, it ran one step ahead as we followed in the dance.
It was just ecstatic to get to do this
yeah.
for, you know, like a 60, 70 piece orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
And we were working with the Wrecking Crew, and they cut the entire rhythm track on the first or second pass. So here it is. And the Association didn't want it.
Did they ever say later, we made a mistake?
Yeah, no. In fact, they didn't make a mistake. Something got started in the gossip mill mm. about them not wanting to do their song. But the mm. truth was that we were analog.
Mm-hmm.
And we could only get a certain amount of music on one of those big mm-hmm. records. And they're almost through with their album.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like the moon program.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, well, yeah, we could do it, but we're going to have to do this. We're going to have to build one of these. And it turned into like a technical exercise. Can we get this much sound
mm-hmm.
on the album? They decided they couldn't do it. It hurt me because I thought this is a hit. This is out of the park. The story that people like to tell, which actually is true, is that Bones Howe said to them, well, blah, 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 you need to take some songs off because you need to do this song. This mm-hmm. song is going to be a hit.
Mm-hmm.
And there was some discussion, and they decided, well, they didn't have room for it or weren't going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
To make a long story short, he said, the day this record goes number one, I'm no longer your producer.
Mm-hmm.
And it went number one in the UK.
Yeah.
And it was number two here, but it was number one in the UK twice, three mm-hmm. times. And then it was number one here with Donna Summer.
Yes.
In 78.
I love her version.
Yeah, I love it too.
Yeah.
So anyway, they got, you know, they lost their producer over it. He quit.
Mm-hmm.
because he's seething. You know, he sees this record is just taking off in all kinds of different directions, and it opens. It's opened a lot of doors. You can change things.
Yeah,
you could even change the playlist.
Yep,
because they were stolid then. They were. I'm talking about top 40 venues. Like they were like not gonna play that.
Right.
And it was getting a lot of underground exposure. All the long records, the Doors, the long Like My Fire, all those records were being played underground.
Yeah.
So I was very, very lucky. They went on MacArthur Park because it gave them something long to play.
Yep.
I remember when Ron Jacobs called me from 93 KHJ one afternoon, and he said, congratulations, he says, you know, we love MacArthur Park here at 93 KHJ, number one station in the country. Mm. He said, well, we need an edited version. We can't play 7 minutes and 21 seconds. And I said, can I call you back on that? Mm. So I sat with my good friend, the Devil, for a while. And we decided that we didn't want to edit it.
Mm-hmm.
So we called back over there and said, Ron, we love you. Here's to KMEN, San Bernardino. We love 93KHJ. We can't edit it. It'll change it. You know what it'll do? Mm-hmm. It'll turn it into an ordinary record.
Or it'll be a record, yeah.
That we have only time to do one sort of chunk, record-sized chunk.
Yeah.
And so you know they want like 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we refused them.
Mm-hmm.
And a week later, 93KHJ went on it, and it stayed on the playlist for like 18 weeks or something like that.
So I'm going to make you tell the only one Jimmy Webb classic anecdote for this show. And the one I want you to tell is you're driving in Ireland through the night with Richard Harris, and you come upon a whiskey factory. You got this story?
Yeah.
Okay, tell that story.
Well, it's early in the morning, it's about 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. We're trying to make our way from the beautiful Shannon River Valley, like across the hills to Dublin itself. And we run across a factory going great guns, belching clouds of smoke, little tractors running everywhere and horns honking, trucks pulling in and out. And this is a Sunday night in the middle of Ireland. Nothing is happening. But here's this, it looks like a military installation. And as we pull up to the main gates, a great big truck pulls out in front of our car, and it's going down this little tiny back road. And I look up and I said, Richard, is that what I think it is? I said, that looks like, and he said, whiskey, Jimmy Webb. It's whiskey. And we rode along there in the dark, just meditating on that glorious, shining amber fluid. And I said, Dick, do you think you could ever drink all the whiskey on that truck? And I got this sly look about him, and he said, ah, no, Jimmy Webb, but I got him working nights.
Love that story. Fred liked that story. I heard Fred laughing. I could hear Fred laughing over there. I got a laugh out of Fred. That's not easy to do. Near the end of the interview, one of the things that I casually and maybe unthinkingly suggested was that Jimmy play for me my favorite song that he's ever written, which is called The Moon is a Harsh Mistress. And Jimmy's kind of taken the summer off from playing and singing. His piano playing wasn't in the shape that he wants it to be in. He considers himself rightfully a very, very good piano player. And so what happened was he started to have a lot of trouble playing this song up to his standards. And he would start, and he would stop, and he would start, and he would stop, and he would make a horrible face because he would be so mad at himself. And then he would look around to the engineer and producer Fred Guarino as if, well, you can fix this all up later, which was not going to happen. And at a certain point, because he was really struggling with it, and I was feeling kind of bad for having asked for it in the first place, I suggested, you know, we don't have to do this. We could end this some other way. And he sort of looked at me and he shook his head and he went back to this. And, you know, in a way that I found very touching, I thought he is going to play this damn song for me if it takes him 3 hours of trying to do it. He's going to play this song for me no matter what the cost to him is. And I'm thinking, you know, and I'm sort of, you know, I'm just nobody. He's Jimmy Webb, you know, but he's going to do this thing for me. I did find myself a little moved by the incredible effort. You're going to hear some of that incredible effort. This may not be the most beautiful version of this song you ever heard, but it's the most heartfelt I've ever heard anyway. So back to the action. So we've been talking a long time here. And I feel like I have you prisoner for a while, but don't want to keep you prisoner here forever. But I do want you to, I want to at least hear, because I have Jimmy Webb in my presence at a piano, yeah. I want to take advantage of that. My favorite song really is of yours, The Moon is a Harsh Mistress. I think it's an amazing song. So before you play, do you want to say anything about how you thought this through? Did an image come to you? It's a title of a book, right?
I used to read a lot of science fiction when I was a kid.
Yeah.
My educators were Robert A. Heinlein, Isaac Asimov, Arthur C. Clarke, Frederick Pohl, Judith Merrill, I think her name was, did all these anthologies.
Yep.
And The Moon is a Harsh Mistress is a novelette that Robert A. Heinlein wrote. A lot of his stuff was almost juvenile. It was about rocket ships and ray guns and things like that. This little novelette was different because it put forth political ideas. Mm. And one of the ideas was that before you could be a citizen, you would have to do your military service.
Mm-hmm.
There was no, there would be no conscription as we know it,
mm-hmm.
which really ends up with the poor and the disenfranchised really bearing most of the military burden. But he saw this. He saw this and they've set it in the future. And all I knew is I loved that title.
Yeah.
It's just like Still Crazy After All These Years.
Yeah.
The Moon is a Harsh Mistress. I'm going to write that song one of these days.
This is my second Robert Heinlein conversation in 2 days. Seriously, I used the word grok, G-R-O-K, in print the other day, and somebody asked me, what does that mean? Is that a typo?
No.
I said, no. It's grok. Come on.
I grok.
You grok what I'm saying. All right, so here we go. The Moon is a Harsh Mistress.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, you got to sing for your supper now.
Really? This is a folk song. This is me thinking about folk songs in the future.
Well, you did write a very hard thing to play. You can't blame the composer because he's sitting here.
Yeah, it's not really that hard to play. It's just me taking the summer off.
Ah.
And have you done anything to this piano?
No.
You don't have to do this.
I'll do it.
All right.
I'll get it in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
I've got it in the wrong key, so I'm gonna put it somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
But I know what I'm missing. I know what I'm missing. I'm missing my headphones.
It's a hard note.
See her how she flies, golden sail across the sky, close enough to touch, but careful if you try, though she looks as warm as gold, the moon's a harsh mistress, the moon can be so cold. Once the sun did shine, good Lord, it felt so fine. The moon, a phantom rose through the mountains and the pines, and then the darkness fell. So hard, so hard to love her. I felt that of her eyes, I fell out. Tripped and I missed my star. I fell and I fell alone. The moon's a harsh mistress, and the sky is made of stone. Hard to call your home.
That's just an incredibly wrenching rendition. But we've got more to talk to Jimmy Webb about. He thought he was done. It turned out he wasn't. You'll find out why in the next segment.
Close your eyes, my pretty child. Well, the night is dark and the wind is wild. I will stand beside your bed. Night, there's nothing you need, fear or dread. You can sleep now.
Few quick things. First of all, this is the second of two parts, and we will link to the first part in the webpage for this episode. Second of all, thanks to producer Jonathan McNichol, and incredible thanks to Betsy Kaplan, the producer who arranged this and then did just a heroic job editing this material. So it was sort of the end of the day. I mean, Jimmy was pretty clearly tired. He said so. He thought he was done. I thought he was done. And then his wife, the wonderful Laura Savini, came in and asked him to talk about one more thing that she thought was very important. And he said yes. And I think that's Jimmy Webb, you know. So the thread that goes through my interview with Jimmy is his tenacity to make the music that still means a lot to so many people, even when he's tired and frustrated. So we thought we were done, and we weren't. And instead, we got this.
So what do you say? You tired now?
I'm tired.
You're tired. Okay. We're done then.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah.
God, man, I have to start singing every day.
You got to do it.
And that is the way voices work, I think.
You know? Yeah. Oh, yeah. But I'm noticing that key you know, and I hate to start doing this, and most of my friends don't. Mm-hmm. And that is, start dropping things a whole step.
Yeah, I mean,
very few will do it.
Right. McCartney stays in a lot of his old keys. He seems to still have a lot of those high notes.
In a way, I think it's a mistake because I think it's letting go of something that you shouldn't be letting go of.
Right.
You should be fighting a little harder to keep that.
Yeah.
Can you talk about one more thing, you two?
Yes.
I love the song Highwayman and what it's about, and I love that it was just redone by the High Woman.
Yeah, High Women, yeah.
But I'm producing where I don't belong.
So no,
this is a
family affair here.
You want to go ahead and ask me about it?
All right. So, okay. So, actually, we should say there's a fairly new group out called the High Women. They seem to have taken that title from one of your most famous songs, the High Women. So, first, say a little bit about that. This is a song where you're trying to do something, I think, with the way, you know, Springsteen has a new album out that's Western music. You're trying to do something with Western music.
Well, it was not particularly a country song. Mm-hmm. It ended up in the hands of Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson, Johnny Cash, and Willie Nelson. Mm-hmm. And it arrived there because it was hand-carried down there by Glenn Campbell. And he played it for them, and said, there's four of you guys, and there's four verses, and you guys should go. Well, it was a big, big record.
Yeah.
It was a huge record for them. And it's been recorded by an amazing group of people. But back in the 80s, when it was on the charts, women started calling almost immediately and saying, do you have the female, the gender version for a woman to sing it? No, not really. Jane Oliver was one of the singers who came to me and specifically wanted to do that song, and I just didn't have anything on that because it's a testosterone charged thing about being a dam builder, you know, on the Wild Colorado. You know, it's a Waylon Jennings song, what it is. But it had an interesting subplot in that it was talking about a transfer of souls. It was talking about being reincarnated in various guises, and yet something in that person still lived on in people who came after that person. Mm-hmm. Almost a science fiction idea.
Yeah.
I was a sailor, and I was born upon the tide, and with the sea I did abide. I sailed a schooner round the Horn of Mexico. I went aloft to furl the mainsail in a blue. And when the yards broke off, they say that I got killed. I am living still.
So I got a Grammy. Not bragging, but I got a Grammy that year for Best Country Song.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to Waylon about that one day in the control room and saying, you know, I got this award. He said, what was that? And I said, well, it was a Grammy. And he said, what for? And I said, well, it was for Best Country Song.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, which country was that? So,
but this new group has Brandi Carlile. So talk about somebody who sings at the top of her range too. Amanda Shires and Natalie Hemby. They're the high women.
And occasionally, I think Sheryl Crow's in part of that. And it's almost as though I've gone full circle with that song. Now I'm living in another world where women are singing this song. And writing their own lyrics, by the way, they wrote their lyrics, and their lyrics are fantastic. They're about people trying to get across the border, women particularly, women trying to get through this immigration nightmare, and it just the fact that the song still persists in having relevancy is amazing and edifying. You know, it makes me feel so fantastic.
Yeah.
To write a song and 30 years on, you know, have it still mean something to someone.
Mm-hmm.
I was a high woman and a mother from my youth. For my children, I did what I had to do. My family left Honduras when they killed the Sandinistas. We followed a coyote through the dust of Mexico. Every one of them except for me survived, and I am still alive. I was a healer. I was gifted as a girl.
And it's a persistent song. It's gonna go. You know, the song's about persistence, about mm-hmm. refusing to acquiesce to
yeah.
death. And the song is the same way in the real world. It refuses to die. It's going to go on and live another life
mm-hmm.
now.
Yeah. Well, that's...
So there's some interesting cross currents to it.
That's part of the wonder of all this. Same with Wichita Lineman, which keeps getting reborn. It's now a jazz standard. Cassandra Wilson does it. Shannon
yeah.
Butcher does it. So
Pat Metheny did a beautiful yeah. job. But.
So 30 years from now, people are going to be doing something else with this music. And 30 years after that, and we're going to be gone at a certain point, you and I, and this music is still going
we
to keep
are?
Going. Yeah, it's oh. like, even horses die. Everybody dies, you know, but it's still going to, that's got to be a good feeling, you know, that 30 years, it's still going to be happening. If there's people on earth, they're
yeah.
going to be singing some
well,
of these songs.
Thank you for saying that.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't... Songwriters never rely on things like that to sustain ourselves. You know, I'm always working, I'm always touring, I'm always writing.
Yeah.
And that's all I can see for me in the future. Mm. As long as I can tour, as long as I can evoke a response, as long as people will come out and fill a 400-seater,
mm-hmm.
I'll be there, folks.
All right.
Meet yeah. me at the... You know,
at the Kate.
At the Kate.
Yeah.
I'll be there.
All right. Thanks, Jimmy Webb.
All right.
All right. You gave it everything.
Okay.
We're the high women. We sing a story still untold. We carry the sons you can only hold. We are the daughters of the silent generation. You send our hearts to die alone in foreign nations. They may return to us as tiny drops of rain, but we will still remain. And we'll come back again.